Hi, my name is Jennifer and I'm an alcoholic. So how am I going to know when to stop? You'll tell me? Tell me? Okay. Hi, I'm visiting from Burlington, Vermont, and like you guys might think this is really cheesy, but I just moved there from the West Coast, like from New Mexico in the United States, and it's the first time I've been to Canada, so I'm like all excited. Like, woo, speaking of the Canadian meeting, this is cool. So anyways, all right, alcoholism. So I guess I'll share my experience with you a little bit and my strength and hope as well. I took my first drink when I was 5 years old, and my stepfather thought it would be cool to play quarters with me. And so I got really drunk, and I really enjoyed it. And it's very interesting that I remember. And I never had that feeling again drinking ever in my life. But I felt very whole, and like I got a lot of attention, and I really enjoyed it. I just felt like really a part of. And I had, at a very early age, tried to get out of myself. Like I used to, a lot of kids will spin in circles and look, you know, at the floor and get all dizzy and fall down. I actually did that for hours where my mom was like, God, this is not normal. And then, you know, I was very hyperactive. I like binge ate candy and hid it in my room. I was absolutely insane from a really early age. And so when I was 5, I got drunk for the first time, and I never forgot it. And when I was 10 or 11, I started taking sips off my parents' like liquor and putting water back in the bottle and hiding it. And I lived in this little copper mining ghost town in Jerome, Arizona, out on the West Coast. And I worked across the street from our house at this art gallery. I was like an apprentice. And I soon found the key, I was like 10, I found the keys to like the donation boxes, and my house was right across the street, and all the houses were on stilts, because they were like on the side of a mountain, and my bedroom was downstairs, and there was this big hole under the porch, and that was right next to my bedroom, and I'd steal like 6 packs, 12 packs, and like run it over to my house across the street and hide it, and like go out my window at night, and drink that with my friends, and my parents had like BDs, these cigarettes from India, and I'd smoke those all the time. And but like, and this is funny, I also had a tab running down the street at the like local bubblegum store, you know, like soda pop and like candy, and I like had a tab running, like a $40 tab, I'm like 10 years old, and like it was ridiculous, I was just insane. And basically, by the time that I was 11, I was institutionalized. I was a type 4 alcoholic that they talk about in Into the Wise in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was institutionalized and I was dangerous. And my behavior equaled that of somebody who had been using alcohol for years and years and years, but I had not been using alcohol for years. I was fucked. Excuse my language. And so I was institutionalized from 11 to 17. I was in foster care, group homes, psychiatric hospitals, the whole nine yards. And I would say that, you know, while using, I did not just use alcohol, I used other things. But when I was about 16, I was on the run from one of my foster homes. And I had been up for about a week, and drinking was a major part of this. And so I was like on this crazy binge. And these are the kind of things that happen to me. I'm 16 years old, on the run from my foster home. The cops catch me, they bring me back to my foster home. My foster mom was like, you're crazy. By the way, your friends called, they're laughing at you. And I just was like, what? They're what? Huh? I'm running away again. She's like, I'll give you 24 hours before I call the cops. Things were just very weird there. And so I ran away again. And we used to, it was like this little, you know, town of sticks. And we'd cut across the freeway instead of going 4 miles into town. And so I did that, and my depth perception was a little bit off, and apparently a Thunderbird, one of these big cars, was like booming down the highway at like 65 miles an hour, and I didn't think it was that close, so I stepped out in front of it, and I got whacked, and I got sideswiped. I like flipped over this car, had a backpack on my back, and that is the only reason I live. And this is kind of, like, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, happened to me. Pretty much. And it was all because of, I had this like grandiose thinking, and I was like on it, you know, like no cars, be a fan, you know, I'm pissed. So, and that's also a good example of having a higher power and not having any clue, because the only reason I lived was because I had a backpack on my back that, amazingly enough, I still probably shouldn't have lived. I like bounced really far after I flew over this car on my back, and I lived. And so, you know, when I was 17, I fell asleep with my bottles. My first blackout was like when I was 16, and I continued to have blackouts for many, many years. I guess, you know, we all have this like big, alcoholics, I tend to think, all have this big, black, empty hole inside themselves that they cannot fill. And they hate themselves, and they think they suck, and they think the whole world has wronged them, and the only thing that ever did fill that hole for them was the drink, or whatever they used. So I feel like, and you know, and that never worked for me. Like, I really got my hole filled at first, but then it never worked, and I was just chasing this thing that didn't exist. And what I found when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous was I was definitely seeking a sense of spirituality and somewhere where I belonged. And I really find that I belong and fit in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I guess, I'm trying to like sum up the end of my drinking. And basically, this is what I tell people. When I hit bottom when I was 16, and I kept going until I was 23. And if you can imagine a visual of somebody driving a car down a dirt road going like 35 miles an hour, and there's a seatbelt that's like hanging out of the door that's shut, and there's a human being holding onto the seatbelt just getting dragged down this gravel road, that's what it was like from 16 to 23. I just got the shit beat out of me, and I would not let go. I was set on trying to make it work and trying to make what I thought worked work, and it didn't. And when I was very young, I was exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was about 13 years old, and I don't remember anything about it, but that's how I knew it existed. And things just went back and forth from really bad to like white knuckled to really bad to white knuckled, and by the time that I was, I moved to Santa Fe when I was 22 years old, I guess, Santa Fe, New Mexico, when I was 22 years old, and things just got really bad, you know, it just like they had before, it was like peaks and valleys, it just got really bad and then it evened out, really bad and evened out. And it just got so bad this time that I didn't know what to do. I was constantly in a blackout. I would wake up out of a blackout, like in parking lots, like under cars, and like screaming and crying at a bunch of people and like throwing rocks at cars. And all sorts of weird stuff was going on. And like my drug dealers wouldn't talk to me anymore. And, you know, nobody, people were like, that girl's crazy. And I kind of like, I guess, in many of my blackouts decided to tell everybody my life story and how horrible it was and ask people to help me get sober. It was just absolute insanity. And I was just bankrupt, you know. I wanted to kill myself for so long, and I used alcohol, drugs, and sex, and anything I could get my hands on to just black out the entirety of my soul. And I was like the walking dead. And I was basically, a friend of mine died, and another friend of mine was like, you know, I have this friend who's newly sober, and maybe you should talk to them. And I was very interested in that, because I, you know, was trying to get sober. And the real thing about me trying to get sober, though, it's funny, because I thought that I had a cocaine problem, and that I needed to quit doing cocaine, and I was fine. I had no idea I had, like, an alcohol problem. None at all. And so I decided that I would quit drinking because that I couldn't quit doing cocaine because I drank all the time. And then when I quit drinking, or I tried to quit drinking, I realized that I could not stop. And the longest I could stay sober was like 5 hours. And it scared the shit out of me. But I kept up the facade. I was like, no, I have a cocaine problem. And I can quit drinking anytime I want. It was just way too much for me to fathom. And so anyway, it's this sober person, this friend died, and you know, somebody's like, just talk to my sober friend. And so I called this person, and I was going to go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And basically, I went out and drank that night, and the next day, when I was supposed to, I had been in bed for like a couple hours, and they came to my house and knocked on my door, and I was laying in bed, and I can hear this person knock at my door. And it was probably the first time I had a sense of real emotion in a very, very, very long time. And I felt guilt. But it was really healthy for me to like have that moment of like, this person is here to take me to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and I am drunk and in my bed, and I'm not going to get up and answer that door. You know, like, no way, I'm not getting up to answer that door. And I didn't. And it was insane. I felt so, and I'd been burying my feelings for so long, I had no idea what it was like to feel that, except for like a really sick and twisted, I hate myself kind of guilt and shame. Like, I didn't know, I couldn't touch on any other kind of emotion that was any kind of form of healthiness. And so, I lived with that feeling and really started becoming, like, aware that, like, I was not hiding as much behind, like, oh, we have a drug problem. I was starting to embrace that I had an alcohol problem. And so I called this person back a couple weeks later, and I did end up going to an AA meeting with them. And I went to my first AA meeting at a place called the Friendship Club in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And I raised my hand, and I said, my name's Jennifer, and I'm a raging alcoholic. And I was like, I was crying hysterically, it was like blowing snot bubbles, it was so not pretty. And I start talking about how I want to die and how I'm like blacking out and waking up under cars and I'm just running my mouth and rambling. And I really was, I just was talking a lot about how I wanted to die and how I felt. And then like during saying that, I was like, wait, I don't want to die. And I mean, it was just really intense for me. And some lady stood up in the back of the room and cut me off and was like, you don't have to die, and like started talking. And I was like, whoa, this is insane. And in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it talks about needing a message of depth and weight. And that was my message of depth and weight. And it just blew my mind that somebody cared at all whether I was like gonna live or die, because I didn't really, you know, I couldn't make up my mind whether I cared or not. So it was great. And, you know, I got two big books, not one, from everybody in the meeting room. and I kept coming. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous for about 3 months. And I followed all the suggestions of everybody. I got a sponsor, went to 90 meetings in 90 days. I hung out with other people in the program. I stopped hanging around all my old friends. It was like a miracle. Like, things just changed. And then, like, I started working the steps. And, but things were not easy. I also got evicted from my house, and I could not keep a job, and it was really, really hard for me. But it was also just really amazing. And what happened was, is that I could, the first step, I really understood that my life was unmanageable. But I really thought I was powerful still. And what happened was, I had, like, 3 months, I went to this big conference, right before, I like had 3 months at this conference or something. I went to a big conference called ICIPA, which is the International Conference of Young People in Alcoholics Anonymous in Kentucky. And the night I got back, I went to a meeting and I raised my hand at this meeting and I asked for help and people offered me help and I said, I don't need any help. And I went out and I drank and I used that night. And what happened for me was amazing, actually. And I do not suggest, my disclaimer, I do not suggest relapse has got to be a part of somebody's program, because it does not have to be. But for me, I got to understand what powerlessness was that night. And that was God's plan for me. And if I hadn't had that experience, I wouldn't know. And basically what happened was, I went to a bar and I'm reaching for this drink and everything inside my body is screaming at me, no. There's this high-pitched screaming, no. in my voice, but I couldn't stop my arm. I physically could not control my body. And I reached for this drink, and by the time it hit my lips, everything inside of me was saying yes. And I also got to see there was a progressive illness. I had just quit drinking 3 months ago, and by the time I had 3 drinks in me, I was in a blackout. And before I hit the blackout, though, I couldn't stop drinking. I couldn't put the drink out of my hand. I had to hold it, and I had to have it, and everything inside of me was just like, yes. And but there was this longing inside of me to just get rid of it. And I was in the bathroom of the bar on my knees in the bathroom praying to my higher power, like, please help me stop. I cannot stop. It was a very, very disturbing evening. The next night I came back into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been lucky to be sober ever since, thank God. And I've been sober, I've just been sober for a little over 2 years, and yeah, that would have been very funny, sorry, I'm like, oh, dear. It's been amazing for me to work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous with a sponsor. And I found so much freedom in the program. It talks about in We Agnostics not having to care what other people believe or think anymore, and that's been amazing for me. The first time I read We Agnostics, it blew my mind. I was like, oh, it's not, I don't really have to care. All I have to do is find what works for me and do that and let other people live their lives. It was a whole epiphany. I just was blown away. And finding a higher power has been amazing for me. You know, I was out at dinner one night with a bunch of friends in Santa Fe, and there were like 15 of us out at this restaurant, and we were having these like really intense discussions. And it reminded me of like what I had been looking for the whole time I was out there drinking and using. I was looking for unity and like a sense of spirituality that I don't get anywhere else but from my higher power in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and with the people I know from Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just made my life amazing. I took inventory, and by the time I was done taking inventory, which was so hard because I was so afraid of admitting it to somebody and doing my fifth step, when I did my fifth step, by the end of that thing, I was laughing my ass off at myself. I was like, you are a piece of work, buddy. You just work, like, ridiculously. And I learned how to not take myself so seriously, which was a huge gift. And I got to look at my character defects and how they served me and what the opposite. When I did my sixth step, I got to look at the opposite of my character defects as well, like fear and faith, you know, and it was very interesting to learn about that. And, I mean, I'm talking about the steps way out of order, but, you know. The third step, don't do them out of order. It's not suggested. I'm just talking about them out of order. But the third step was awesome, too. Being, I say that prayer every morning, you know, God, I offer myself to thee. And that really helps me put myself, it right-sizes me, you know. And my purpose here as a person who's working the steps, who's worked the steps, who goes to AA and has some time in sobriety is to be of maximum service to God and others and my fellows, as it says. And how I do that is I show up to AA and I speak and I do service work, and I don't know, my life is just amazing. But for the newcomer, I would say, you know, I did what was suggested to me, and what was suggested to me was that I go to 90 meetings in 90 days, I get a sponsor, and a sponsor is somebody who has a sponsor, who has worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and who has worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous themselves. They're suggested to be of the same sex. That's the sponsors. And, you know, and then you work the steps, which I did because I got a sponsor. And I did that, and I also got women's phone numbers because I'm a woman, and I hung out with lots of chicks, and that was really, really hard for me because I didn't like the girls. I thought they were crazy and catty. And that's another thing Alcoholics Anonymous has given me is that, like, I am not afraid of women today, which is amazing. And I'm not catty with them, you know? It's a real big gift because I never had that in my life. And, yeah, I love, and it's so cheesy, like, I really love Alcoholics Anonymous. They used to tell me that my life would be beyond my wildest dreams, and I was like, fuck you. The bullshit, man. I was like, fuck you. And my wildest dreams were like, maybe I'll get my GED and maybe I won't be a waitress forever. You know, I'm like, maybe I'll find some dude I like and we'll hang out. Those are my big aspirations. And, you know, I had no idea what friendship meant and love meant and freedom and God. I say God and higher power, you know, it's my deal. You know, don't take offense. Nothing in particular. And the experience that I've had has just been really a blessing. You know, I do have my GED. I just moved to Burlington, Vermont because I got a job at a detox center. And I got to do my lifetime dream job in Santa Fe before I left, which was to work with troubled teens because I was a troubled teen. And just, you know, I'm like, it's really scary too because I'm really big on failure. Like, I'm really into it, man, because success scares the crap out of me. And so I've been doing a lot of work on success lately and what the hell that means, and pretty much it's anything good. And I get really uncomfortable when it happens to me. But this last, on May 30th, I picked up my 2-year medallion, and it was very cool. I really realized, I used to say the same, and maybe you guys have heard it, that the path gets narrower and the horizon gets wider. And, like, my path has gotten so much more narrow. I was able to have a psychic change as a result of working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that psychic change for me is that I'm conscious. And so every time the little voice says, just lie, there's the conscious voice that says, you'll have to make amends. Da, 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 da. And I'm like, just lie, make a mess, you know, it's like, And so I've been able to get it's a gift, though, it really is. So my path has gotten way narrower. Like, I have no tolerance for my bullshit. Like, I can maybe go 3 days walking real thick, but, you know, it's really uncomfortable and I get really close to a drink, so I don't want to do it. And then my horizon is just amazingly huge. Like, who knows what the hell is going to happen to me? I have no idea. But I have not been let down once. And I had a really hard year last year. I thought I, me and the doctors, not just me, because that would just mean, you know, a crazy alcoholic. I thought I had cancer. The doctors thought I had cancer. I had an operation. I turned out to be fine, but that happened. My mom's husband got a brain tumor. All hell broke loose last year. It was really, really hard. And I thought I was going to die from 1 minute to the next. I just thought I was going to die because it was just so scary and so hard. And every time I looked at these experiences that were happening to me, I was like, see, this sucks and everything sucks. And by the end of it, I was able to see that, you know, nothing really is good or bad. And I have a disease of perception. And I was blessed when I thought I had cancer. And then they did an operation. I did not have cancer. 2 weeks later, and I had moved, actually. I was, like, traveling around the country being a yoo-hoo, doing whatever I wanted. And then, like, came back because of this cancer stuff. Had an operation. 2 weeks later, my mom's husband shows up with a brain tumor. So I would have been gallivanting around the country when my family needed me, actually. And I was able to have, like, a recent experience with pain and illness myself that I, you know, and so I was able to be there for them. And, you know, that was, like, God's plan for me. So no experience, no matter what I think about it, is really bad or good, because I perceive it, like, however I'm gonna, and usually it's pretty skewed. And every time on the end of it, I learn something, and that's how I learn, is through experience. You know, life doesn't turn into a box of chocolates just because I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous and I don't drink and do drugs anymore. You know, I mean, it still happens all around me. And AA is not so I can just come here and hide from life. I come here, I get sober, I carry the message so that I can go out and live my life. And that is just amazing. And I don't know how long I've talked for, but I think I'm out of things to say. I'm very grateful to be speaking here. Thank you for asking me, and that's all I have.